Well, welcome again, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Auto Central, South Africa's number one motoring podcast. And my name is George Mini, joined as usual by Wandile Sishi. You were on holiday, weren't you, recently?
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks ago. But yeah, I've been back for like a week now. So I'm kind of offended, George.
What?
Because I've been back.
I was just letting everyone else know. Okay, I'll take that one on the chin. So, Wandy, where can the listeners find the show?
So you can find the show on cliffcentral.com every Monday if you want to listen to the audio. But if you want to see our faces, once again, you can find us on Auto Trader SA's YouTube channel. And of course, if you want to listen to the audio at your convenience, you can find us on Spotify as well as iTunes. And if you're watching the feed, don't forget to subscribe. And hit the like button. And of course, comments. We love some of the ideas you guys give us. So, yeah.
So go find us. You can listen to us anywhere in your car. Don't watch YouTube in your car. Just listen, please. YouTubing and driving. Yeah, I've seen some people do that, actually.
I won't lie. Sometimes YouTube and drive, but it's because it's the audio only.
As long as you can do the audio, it's fine. Don't take your eyes off the road. So what's in today's episode? Why do some countries drive on the other side of the road? I mean, I'd like to rephrase that. Maybe why do some countries drive on the left and others on the right? Obviously, in South Africa, we drive on the left-hand side of the road.
Right.
And which side is potentially safer?
Yeah, good question. I've actually Googled this many times, and it gets interesting, so I can't always.
Well, we'll get into it in a second, and then next up, remember the E200 Coupe we had from last week?
Yeah, I love it.
Well, today we have our expert journalist, Sean Nurse, joining us to talk about the latest 2021 Mercedes-Benz E63.
Yeah.
Now, I used to drive a C32 AMG.
Yeah.
Loved that beast of a car. Got too many fines. But the E63 is no slower.
Yep.
And then, as usual, we'll be answering three burning motoring questions from our Ask Auto Trader platform. So let's get right into it. Why do some countries drive on the wrong side of the road or the right side of the road?
Yeah, it depends on which
depends
side
on your
you
perspective,
are.
Right? Depending on where you come from. So in 76 countries, roughly 40%, and the stats change depending on how many countries there are in the world.
Yeah, it keeps changing, right? It was 196 yesterday, and now it's 195 apparently. So.
Where did the one country go?
I think it was, who knows? Actually, it's a good question. I don't know how countries disappear and reappear.
So 76 countries in the world, or territories, use the left-hand drive. Left-hand side of the road to drive on. However, in reality, most of the world drives on the right-hand side of the road.
Yeah.
And if you have a look at a map, you can see most of the world's painted in the right-hand side color, which we'll put up and is painted red.
Yeah.
So today we'll unpack the implications of driving on one side of the road versus the other and which side is safer. And it's weird, but I don't know. Which side of the road I actually prefer now after reading all of this. But we'll get into it in a second.
Have you driven on the right-hand side of the road?
No, I've like never even tried.
Yeah, me neither. So I wouldn't necessarily know like what's the big implications. But I've seen a lot of people who drive left and right. And apparently it's a real sort of like mission in your mind to kind of get used to the change.
A proper mind shift.
That's the word I was looking for.
You thought it. I didn't say it. So if you briefly had to guess, Wendy, what do you think, why do you think some countries drive on the left while others drive on the right?
So my understanding before, obviously we've done a little bit of, you know, thoughts into this, but my understanding before I had done that was America was kind of the driving force towards this. But I mean, it can't just be a flip of the coin. I think there must have been
You're one of those people in the world that think that everything happens in America first and everything in America is bigger and better.
The exact opposite. I think everything that is wrong starts there, such as the imperial system versus our working system. So, so I thought a lot of countries were copying them.
Metric system, you mean?
Yeah, metric system. Instead of, you know, using the right sort of systems, I thought they were just kind of influencing them.
Yeah, I think sometimes the Americans do things just because they want to do them differently.
Yeah, why do you what do you think is the reason?
Well, maybe it's a bit of a coin toss in terms of which side is better and which side is worse.
Yeah.
You know, seeing as I've done a little bit of reading on this, maybe it'd be biased for me to have an opinion
to
answer it. But looking at what we're about to get into, I think the outcome is the right outcome. But there's some funny things that I think we're going to get into in a second. But the left-hand drive practice, believe it or not, dates back to Rome.
Yeah, I would have never guessed that.
So South Africa drives on the left-hand side.
Why Rome? Were people driving in Rome?
Well, it's because of the chariots.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, yeah.
So what's more important, steering the chariot or wielding your sword or throwing a spear?
It depends what you're doing.
Well, I would imagine you want to hit the bad guy.
Yeah, definitely. If you're in a chariot and you kind of, I don't know what it's called, but was it chariot racing?
Yes. Chariot racing.
Then I think that then in that scenario, kind of your right hand would really important.
Bar fighting became boxing, right? So that we could legalize hitting each other.
Yeah. I mean, this is given that everyone was right-handed.
The majority of the world is right-handed. Let me check on that. what percentage of the world is right-handed?
It's probably more. I would assume so.
90% of the world is right-handed.
Well, there we have it.
So if you're left-handed, you form part of the minority.
Yeah. Shame. So this is basically in the 1700s.
I wouldn't say shame. You're going to get a couple of things flung at you just now.
I'm assuming that's back in the day. This can't be the 90s. This is probably
1773. So apparently it carried over to medieval Europe in 1773, and the British government passed measures to make left-hand traffic a law.
And this is when, this is still horses, or is this like later on in the process?
No, 1773 is definitely still horses. And when did cars come about?
Yeah,
cars came about in the late 1800s. Yeah, so there's definitely still horses around. But post the revolution, France favored the right. And you know, the France and the English, they didn't get along at some point in time.
They just disagree with each other.
Some of them still don't get along.
Yeah, I've heard and seen French and English people in a bar, and it was...
I've been to both England and France, and you know. Well, I mean, I think they're getting along better than they did in the past.
I mean,
So France favored the right, apparently.
Yeah. Probably as a big stuff you to England.
Well, now we're starting to get into the reality of the politics. It's like America just wants to do their own thing. They want to be different. Yeah. France wants to do their own thing. England wants to do their
Everybody's
own thing.
Everybody's trying to do their own
thing. And there's only two sides of the road.
Yeah, there's, you can't go middle of the road. That wouldn't work. Collisions there.
Have you been in South African taxis? Weirdly enough, though, Napoleon was on the left-hand side, favored the left-hand side, and riding on the right proved to be an intimidating military tactic because he was left-handed.
There it is. See? So you have to think about everyone. Inclusivity.
So having his chariot on the right-hand side, throwing his spear or wielding his sword with his left hand, threw his enemy off because his enemy had their sword on the right-hand side.
Yeah. What do you do in that scenario?
You run away. Yeah. Well, maybe this is the whole reason Napoleon almost conquered the entire world.
Yeah.
But in the US, right-hand drive traffic goes back to the 18th century. And I think you mentioned this.
Yeah.
America's totally different path to Europe. Tell us about America.
So essentially, there were freight wagons. So basically in the USA, there was basically like teams of horses that were pulling wagons. So you needed your strongest hand to kind of control those horses. And when it was
in America, it was less about fighting.
It was less about fighting and more about control of
the horses.
But lots of horses.
But if you think about it, freight. Okay.
Yeah.
So now America, up to now, don't know, you know, whether China's going to take this this trophy from them. But
going around the world.
No, let's not do that. Go back to America. So America's been, you know, one of the most free economies in the world the most powerful nation.
Yeah.
Look at what they're focusing on back then. They're not focusing on fighting. They're focusing on moving goods.
Exactly. Mm. So to control that and to ensure that there's no collisions or a better chance of you not being in a collision or having faster reflexes, because most people are right-handed, they were right-handed. So when it was time for vehicles, they did kind of the same thing. It made sense. But obviously that led to other problems, which I think we will unpack a bit later.
So, okay. All right. So now that's about horses and, carriages and all those things. How does that translate into cars? But before we answer that question, how did South Africa end up getting to drive on the left?
It goes back to the Rome situation and Rome, kind of taking over the British Empire. We kind of just inherited their system, specifically the British system, not necessarily the Roman system. We're just like, you know, it's kind of how they were doing it. So let's just do it this side. Or they kind of decreed that this is the new rule. This is what we're going to do.
Well, I mean, I read somewhere that, in the early days of cars, that people would, you could drive anywhere. And if you look at those old footage, like the cars are just everywhere.
Basically like Nigeria, when I went to Nigeria. That's how it was.
It still happens, I know. Yeah, yeah. Yes, you're right. And then the British Empire decreed that the rule of the road was to keep to the left in order to avoid collision. End of story. They just decreed it.
Yeah.
And guess what? South Africa was part of the British empire.
Yeah. What's interesting, though, is if you look at that map, is a lot of the British colonies were island nations, if that makes sense.
Except South Africa.
Except South Africa and a few southern African countries. So you'll see that it's mostly the lower side or the southern hemisphere of the world where most of the islands are, where you kind of see this.
Where they've stayed driving on the left-hand side.
Correct.
Okay, because most of the world has now switched to the right-hand side.
And lots of the world are kind of speaking to each other, but when you live in an island, you can kind of stick to your own rules.
Well, you don't have neighbors, so nobody driving across the border.
Precisely.
You know, boats don't have wheels yet. You know, I think old Robert Mugabe missed a trick here.
He could have been, you know, kind of, that could have been his trick. Or he's lost.
Change the side of the road that we drive because we don't like the British.
He's lost kind of, I hate you. I make my own rules, you know.
Well, exactly. So this goes back then 2,000 years, right?
It does go back 2,000 years. And back to the point you're saying, when archaeologists were kind of doing research to understand, where does this come from? What's the real reason for this? They saw that kind of the wheel ruts on the chariots were more worn out on the left-hand side because they were kind of going in that circle.
As they turn corners, so the center of gravity shifts to the one side of the of the vehicle. So,
exactly.
So then, you know, is there any benefit to either side of the road? You know, you mentioned earlier a study by Mr. J.J. Leeming in 1969. Tell us about this this study.
It's actually quite interesting. So when we did some research on this, or when he did research on this, which
in 1969.
In 1969, but he's been kind of the authority in, you know, I think he got obsessed about finding out this. Why, I don't know. But essentially what he found is that in more left-hand...
Specifically, which side's safer?
Yes.
Yeah.
He found that the South African side or the left-hand side, driving side, was safer. And that has to do with a lot of the psychology of human beings, and I guess the biology, not the psychology, rather. And that's because your right-hand side, or people are more inclined to the right-hand side, or the right...
Well, I suppose if you're right-handed, your right eye is more dominant, your right foot is more dominant, which then makes sense.
Yeah.
If you're sitting on the left-hand side of the car.
Yeah. If you're sitting on your right-hand side of the car, but on the left side of the road.
Left side of the road, right-hand side of the car, what makes that safer?
Well, the traffic's coming this way. So if you have your right hand, which is your strong hand on the wheel, as well as you can see with your strong eye, the oncoming traffic, your chance of being in an accident are, I wouldn't say significantly lower, but, you know, those are the difference. That's the difference between life and death in some scenarios.
I suppose the angle is significantly different because you're on the side of the potential collision.
Correct.
And you're going to see it first.
Yeah. I mean, I have a bias to my right hand or the right hand side of the road. And my girlfriend's always telling me, hey, move closer this way because I just can't see that side. But if it was... if the roles were switched and it was traffic on that side, you know, it'd be in a situation. So you don't think about these things, but they are real. Plus, I think for car designers, most controls that you are trivial, you'd rather use your left-hand side than your strong arm.
Well, I suppose what you want to do is you want to keep your dominant hand on the steering wheel, which in our case is the right hand in most cases.
Correct.
Except for 10% of people.
Yeah. And whereas on the right-hand side, which ironically is the most countries...
So most countries in the world drive on the
right-hand side
of the road, which is the unsafer side to drive, merely because most people are right-handed.
Yeah, it's strange.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and that's kind of the history of why this is the case. And, you know, honestly, I think it's too late to go back now. Imagine if tomorrow they said we have to make the switch. It happened to Samoa in 2009. And I can just imagine how the insanity that ensued in the cities when that happened.
No, I mean, just imagine what it would cost to switch the side of the road that we drive on.
Yeah.
You know, the entire car park of the country would have to effectively be made redundant. That would take a good 20 years at least. I mean, in South Africa, we've got 10 or 11 million cars.
I wonder what's the cost of actually manufacturing on the two different sides of the roads, if it's significant.
What, so that you can choose?
Yeah, or rather, is it cheaper to just have one design for one side instead of both?
I don't understand what you mean.
So in South Africa, obviously, we have the left-hand drive cars. Imagine if a Mercedes-Benz, for instance, didn't have to do that, if we all just drove on the same side.
Okay, if the what entire is the cost world. Of that? Okay, so what is the cost of designing a car that can drive on both sides? Because that's what most manufacturers have to do, right?
Yeah.
They have to design a car that can effectively drive on both sides of the road. Yeah, except for some cars in America that don't come here. Because, you know, America's at the center of the planet and all.
Basically, right?
You know? Everything is, I mean, you get the World Series in baseball.
And all the aliens always sort of go there. Never us.
I mean, in the World Series in baseball, you only American states compete.
And then,
have you ever heard of Zimbabwe competing in the World Series in baseball?
You never know. You never know. maybe next month, you know.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the conclusion of which side of the road we drive on, which side is safer, and Wendy and I's opinion on that topic. so let's take a short break. And when we come back, we will be with Sean Nurse reviewing the 2021 Mercedes-Benz E63, which is right behind me over here. Beautiful little car. See you in a sec. All right. Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And Sean Nurse has appeared in the studio.
I don't know. Where'd you come from?
Benoni.
I was in Springs yesterday.
Oh, really? What were you doing there?
Buying no these comments. Cool shoes that I'm wearing. No. I don't go there for those. Very, very east, I must tell you. I was getting a bit nervous driving there, but it wasn't that half bad. It's not as bad as people make out, to be honest. It's quite open.
Yeah, I know. It's Lawrence. He's completely changed our perception of it. So don't be scared, people.
Spring, yeah, don't be scared to go to Springs. So from Benoni, Sean Nurse hails. So welcome, Sean. And Sean is here to review the 2021 Mercedes AMG, I'm told it's called, not the Mercedes-Benz AMG, the Mercedes AMG E63, which is in the studio behind us. Yep. Beautiful car. A little bit of an accountant's car, if you ask me. It's got a beast of an engine underneath it, but still the styling isn't like a McLaren. So
is that a complaint?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Sean enjoyed driving this car. Tell us about it, Sean.
Yeah, so the E63 forms part of a duo that's created the super saloon segment for a few decades now, and the BMW M5. So it's kind of a supercar that you can take the kids to school in, type of things. And the new four-wheel drive versions like the E63 and the M5 are even faster. They are
than the previous gen.
Yeah, they're quicker than Ferraris and supercars from a decade ago.
That's 0 to 100?
3.4 seconds.
Shit. Yeah, that's how far is he trying to get the kids to school there?
Well, the nice thing is you can sort of tone it down. You can leave it in comfort mode and it's pretty quiet. You won't scare anybody. You won't wake up the neighbors. And then you can flick it over to race mode and it's savage. It's an animal, yeah.
I used to have the C32 AMG back in the day. Mm. And then I downgraded to the C200 compressor, which I don't know why I did, but anyway. and that car used to do, if I recall, 0 to 100 in something like 4.5 seconds.
That was super quick.
I loved driving that car, but it was only rear-wheel drive. So how does the four-wheel drive system change the dynamics of how this car drives?
So you can get that predictable performance, that same 0 to 100 performance every single time you launch the car. And it's a lot more predictable. You can repeat that performance, doesn't matter in what sort of weather you encounter. And this one's got drift mode, so you can decouple the front axle and only have rear-wheel drive, but then there's no traction control or stability control. So
did you try it?
Not yet.
I've tried it at the pre-facelift national media launch at a track where we got to slide the car around, but would not recommend doing that on the road.
Don't go drifting around our streets.
Yeah, it's a bit out of control when it's in that mode, but it's nice to know that it's got that mode, so it's still a bit of a hooligan if you want it to be.
I think you came straight out of the MA competition, the BMW, straight into this. I mean, that must have been... How was that a different experience?
Well, it was actually nice because normally you get out of like a Creta diesel and you get into an AMG and it feels like you're driving a Formula One car. Yeah. But getting out of one V8 into another, it was a nice comparison. The BMW is definitely a little bit faster than the Mercedes. Not by much, though. I don't think too many people would complain of the performance of the Mercedes, but the BMW is R1 million more expensive.
Okay.
And it appeals to a slightly different market. Both four doors, but the M8's a lot more coupe-ish in its appeal. And
I think the M8 and all the BMWs, as a matter of fact, look a lot more aggressive than this.
Yeah, this is quite toned down. And I mean, this is the facelift, which looks, I think, slightly more aggressive than the pre-facelift, which had a slightly different grill. This one's got what they call the Panamericana grill from the smaller GT sports cars. And they've done a few tweaks, new rear lights, and most of the changes are inside, though.
Talking about the grill. That's one thing that the Mercedes trumps over the BMW.
The
grill.
It's nice.
It doesn't look like it has two nostrils in the front.
That is true. You know, I think there's going to be a running joke the whole year, and it breaks my heart. But
because you're a BMW fan, right?
I am.
I don't understand this duality, but just like he's a Formula One Mercedes fan.
It is what it is. Let's not get into it today.
the Mercedes grill is definitely better than what we've seen on the M4 and M3. I mean, that's such a controversially styled car. I mean,
I actually like that styling.
It'll grow on you, I suppose, once the old grills disappear.
Definitely. But if you look at that M8 I drove, that's got a more traditional kidney grill from BMW, and I think that car looks so good.
Yeah.
So it's just bizarre that they would do that, but anyway, I suppose it definitely has its fans.
So can you drive this thing in calm mode, and do you want to drive it in calm mode?
I drove it all the way here in calm mode, and it was fantastic. Sat in traffic. It's got a lot of semi-autonomous driving functionality, so you just leave the adaptive cruise control on. It will follow the car in front of you in traffic, so it'll brake all the way to a stop, and then when the traffic moves on, it will drive along for you. You just have to keep one hand on the steering wheel. So comfort mode is epic in the car. And then, you know, when you want to test its performance, you just flick the steering wheel switch into race mode, launch control, and it's
goes like a beast.
It's really, really fast. Yeah.
I think last week we had the coupe version, so this is a nice
change.
Well,
we had the E200 coupe version, which is a lot tamer. Is the interior of the E200 in this different?
They're fairly similar, especially from what I saw last week, that E200 was the AMG line. So an aesthetics perspective, it's going to be very, very similar. This is going to have the Affalterbach logo embossed on the seats. And this car's obviously got the new E-Class steering wheel, which has got that new complete touch functionality, which I think is a bit of a hit and a miss. Some people like it.
That's not the first time. Chad hated that. He says that that's the nemesis of this car.
Yeah, if you just touch that volume button a bit too hard, you kind of go out of the menu and it ruins your media experience. Whereas the old system was a lot easier to use. It was just a normal button. But I think maybe with some software updates and maybe, you know, next generation, it will be more user-friendly.
All right, so Sean, finally, before we let you go, your score out of 10?
Give this car an 8 out of 10. We are yet to test the new M5 competition, but I felt that this car has lost a little bit of its ferocious edge and traded it in for a bit of comfort, so that's why it gets an 8.
Okay, so other cars that have got an 8 is a VW e-Golf. The Ford Ranger Thunder, how do you feel that, this car really doesn't compare. It's a totally different class.
Yeah, it's definitely at the top of the super saloon segment at the moment until we test the M5 competition. But those two products that you just listed, they are phenomenal in their own right and also deserving of
a car that's really kind of maybe on its way up to the E63 is the A35 AMG.
Yeah.
And that got a score of 9 from Chad. How do you feel about that?
Well, that particularly the sedan, that A35 sedan, is my favorite Mercedes AMG product because I think it's the perfect proportions, perfect size.
Would you take
size.
It over this?
That's a tough, probably because
I know why. It's because you love driving Porsches, and this is the closest you're going to get to a Porsche.
You know, it's funny because the A35, specifically the A-Class, it's been the car of the year in multiple countries. So it doesn't surprise me that the A35 is still, for some reason, kind of, you know, what everyone's picking.
And I wouldn't want to run that on a daily basis. It would bankrupt me in fuel, a V8. The four-cylinder A35 is a little bit more within easier. My
You said it's 2.4 million rand.
Without options, you're probably looking at 2.6, 2.7 million rand in front of us there. So,
there we go. A lot of money for Mercedes AMG E63. So that's all we have time for, Sean. Thank you very much for coming in. Our expert journalist, ladies and gentlemen, Sean Nurse, having reviewed the 2021 Mercedes AMG E63. And if you want to go and have a look at Sean's review of the car, go into autotrader.co.za and go to the news and review section, and you will find Sean's expert review and others like it. So go and head off over there, and we'll take a short break, and we'll be back with some Ask Autotrader questions. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So that was the review of the Mercedes-AMG E-Class E63 by Sean Nurse. Go and have a look at it and go and choose for yourself. 2.4 million rand.
Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch for me, but, you know, it's a stunning vehicle. So,
well, every day people send in send to Autotrader some motoring-related questions on all things buying and selling. So Wandy and I will attempt to answer three of these today. What's the first question, Wandy?
First question comes from Lizals, who's asking, trade a finance car with a cosigner. So is it possible to trade in while you have, well, debts essentially? Also, can my husband be a cosigner as he has better credit and a better salary?
Well, Lizals, I hope that's how you pronounce your name. Unfortunately, your credit record plays a massive part in you getting finance. So if you don't have a clean credit record, if you are behind on payments, you're not going to be looked at in a positive light by the banks. So you need to clear up that credit record, at least get about 6 months of on-time payments behind you, and the banks will look at you differently. Alternatively, your husband will have to be the main applicant for the finance, and then your total household income will be taken into account.
So the car is going to essentially be in the husband's name in that scenario?
In that scenario, yes.
Okay.
Yes. So remember, the ownership of the car resides with you, but the title of the car resides with the bank until it's paid off.
Understood. All right. Second question comes from Lubello, who's asking, I'd like to ask if there's a dealership that can assist me with in-house finance.
Well, it depends on what your definition, Lubello, is of in-house finance. Most dealerships, probably 99% of dealerships, have F&Is on their floor, are there to assist you and bridge the gap between the dealership, the car, and the bank.
Not necessarily serve as the bank, but kind of the connection.
They are the connection, the conduit between the dealership and the bank, and they will arrange finance and different finance offers for you from the various banks. If you're talking about, if your definition of in-house finance is the dealership actually financing the car, there's not too many of those. There is the option of doing rent to own. Which some dealership groups do, rent to own. Those are products in the market, especially for those that have, you know, in Lizol's case, you know, tainted credit records. You can go and do a rent to own. It's a lot more expensive to do rent to own, but it's an option. And then second and third tier finance organizations or finance institutions. Yeah. But be careful of those. Those interest rates can get high, very, very high.
That's true. Okay. And the last question comes from Manal, who's asking, how do I advertise on Autotrader? Sorry, they caught me by surprise. How do I advertise on Autotrader?
They caught me by surprise too. well, Anel, you go onto autotrader.co.za and there's a link actually that you can go and get an answer to this question. But what you can do is just drop us an email. We'll make it easy for you. Customer service at autotrader.co.za with your name and contact details, and one of our friendly folk will get in touch with you and help you through the journey or process to advertising your car.
Awesome. I think that's everything.
That's everything. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that has been epic. And it's been me, George Mini, and Wandile Sishi for another episode of Auto Central. See you next time.